All right. Hello, and welcome once again to The Runtime. I'm your host, Raphael Kennedy, and this is the podcast where we go deep into software design. Today, I'll be talking with JT, one of the creators of a new shell called New Shell. It's built with Rust, and it aims to feel modern and high level. It's intended to understand structured data and operate in a functional way on that data by composing pipelines of pure functions together. Welcome, JT, and thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Ah, thanks for having me.
So do you mind telling us why you thought that this project needed to exist?
It's always a fun question. Why did you
coming
climb?
In hot.
Yeah. That's right. Why did you climb the mountain? You know, because it was there.
Yeah.
This is one of those that I think kind of came about almost by accident. A friend of mine, Yehuda Katz, who I've worked with for many years, had been playing with PowerShell and thought, oh, maybe there's something here where a PowerShell that feels more functional, that feels more ergonomic, could be like a nice project to try. So he started on a shell project. Unbeknownst to him, I had also in Rust been hacking on a little shell project, you know, at the exact same time he was, and putting together some, oh, maybe if it was nicer in this way or more ergonomic, etc. A lot of what I worked on in Rust was kind of around some the error messages and that kind of ergonomics. And so he and I realized we were working on basically the same project from two different directions, and we merged it. And then we had Andres Robolino come in and bring data thinking to it. So it became very quickly a structured shell in a thinking, in a data compositional way with a bunch of ergonomics thrown in.
So, and you alluded to it, but where do you see New Shell as existing relative to other shells that people might be used to? So you mentioned PowerShell.
Yeah, it's similar. I think the PowerShell is probably one of the only other frames of reference. So a lot of people naturally gravitate to that, which is, that's totally fine. PowerShell is object-oriented. So just like C# and Haskell or F# would be completely different from each other, though similar, I think PowerShell being object-oriented and New Shell being functional and immutable by default, you have a different way of thinking about how you design like the pipelines, how you work in the language itself. So it's similar to PowerShell, but I think only on the surface. As you dig deeper, it begins to feel a bit different. Compared to other shells, it's going to feel a lot different because now you're working in structured data all the time. Rather than using the Unix style of composing Unix commands together and the pipeline being text that flows between one command to the next, now it's structured data, right? You have a universal data format and you can just use commands that pipe the structured data and then a bunch of filter commands that can filter the data and get it to the format that you want. So I think in that sense, it feels like the spirit of the old Unix composable pipelines, but in a completely, I would say more modern, more functional, more structured way.
So something I've been wondering about this is, where do you see the line between a shell and a programming language?
Yeah, I mean, for New Shell's perspective, I think what we're trying to do is blur that. And if anything, maybe even remove that line. From New Shell's perspective, the idea that these are two separate things, like you have either a shell or a programming language, I think we can get rid of that and have something that's designed to be 100% a programming language and 100% a shell. I mean, if you look at, and this is not trying to knock on, say, PowerShell, but PowerShell wasn't really designed to be a programming language. It is a programming language. It kind of grew into a programming language, but I don't think it was ever really designed with to be a programming language from the start. And New Shell is, honestly, there's maybe a couple examples that are counterexamples, but New Shell is largely one of the first that's trying to be fully a shell and fully a language. You could think of it as like an interactive programming language, right? So it's built from the start to be something that you can use interactively, but you can also, you know, build giant scripts out of it if you want to. And there just hasn't really historically been any language or any shell, kind of, you can think of it from both directions, that is the thing in the middle that is both intended to be interactively used and intended to grow to, you know, just large scripts in the programming language.
Yeah. So a previous guest on this podcast, at the end, I'll ask you to talk about some projects that you're excited by. And previous guest mentioned New Shell and said he was working on it and felt like he was in the REPL of a high level scripting language, which it does have a bit of that quality to it, where I haven't spent much time using New Shell, but it seems somewhere between the shell that I'm familiar with and, you know, a scripting language environment. And sort of on that note, it seems like there were clear elements borrowed from Bash, and it seems like a lot of it's intended to feel more like the standard Nix shells than PowerShell does. And it also has some SQL and some PowerShell and maybe some Python thrown in there. When you're sort of gathering these, I guess I'm mostly talking about the ergonomics of the interface. Were there other significant inspirations?
Yeah, I think that, so Yehuda's background and my background, we've both done tons of programming language work, and mm-hmm. we know going into this that the easiest temptation would be to just start designing the programming language aspect of it from day one. And that's a really good way to design yourself into a corner. If you're not careful, you just end up designing the language first and making everything fit that. So, to your question, natural inspirations from things like Fish and Bash about what does it mean to be a shell? What does it mean to be interactive and feel really natural as a thing that's navigating around a file system, opening applications? So there's a lot to learn about that. It sounds on a surface like, oh, I could hack together a shell in an afternoon. Yeah, you could. You could hack together like a 60 percentile kind of experience. But the more you dig into it, the more you really do need to draw inspiration from how the muscle memory and how people have experienced these shells over many, many years at this point. So we definitely designed New Shell to be a shell first. It has to be an interactive mm-hmm. experience first. And then as that began to settle and we said, okay, this is cool. This is how you can compose these pipelines. This feels more natural. Then the language began to build on top of that. And we said, okay, cool. You can make your own commands. These commands are actually kind of fancy macros on the surface. People don't need to know that if they don't want to touch it, you know, and then you can get fancy on top of the foundation, but the foundation needs to be there. So yeah, we definitely took a lot of just playing with the other shells, a lot of reading about the other shells, looking at their source code and just trying to understand it to get to where New Shell's design is today.
Mm-hmm. What can you think of any like specific decisions you had to make to make it feel like a shell?
I mean, it's funny. So I tweeted out about this the other day. I wrote a blog post. I haven't been writing very much, and I wrote one the other day about, so it's kind of one of those, so you think you know what POSIX actually is, and this one was about exit codes, and I said, well, if you think zero means success and non-zero means failure, go read my blog post. And there's so much more to it. There's so much more to what a shell has to understand in terms of just because that application exited with non-zero doesn't mean it failed. You know, if you, what was the one that I was looking at? Git log or something like that, where if you type it and then all of a sudden you look at the exit code and it's like over 100, like 127, I don't remember what the actual number was. Then you have to go look it up and go, what? Why is it non-zero? Why did it fail? And then there's this whole cascading thing happening that you just have to be aware of. You can't just go read the spec, implement exactly that, and get an experience that feels anywhere close to natural for people used to how Bash works and used to how Fish works.
So it's always felt to me that a lot of developers see the shell as a bit of a shibboleth, and that it's, you know, a handful of sort of arcane arts that you have to show that you know how to do in order to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Did you find that there was any push and pull around trying to make something a little more intuitive in the way those are handled?
Like from the community or from...
Yeah.
No. I feel... I mean, so one of the things, and this could be just from the fact that we're doing it in Rust. So there's kind of a natural leaning in the Rust community around take the hard thing and make it easy to use. When I was working on the Rust compiler, one of the things that I did was let's actually design new error messages. And the error messages that the Rust compiler gives today is like the work of not just my work, but many people, Esteban, Cooper being one of the main folks working on that. And the idea of taking the hard thing and making it easy to use feels like a really natural thing in that community because of that kind of the ethic of the Rust community. So I feel like that naturally spilled over. So the early adopters to new shell, like, oh, of course you would do it that way. You would take something like the shell and make it easy to use or make a nicer language. Say like the error messages that we give in new shell. Again, similar inspiration, you know, we underline where you did things wrong. And if the types don't match up, we try to help you understand why the types don't match up, that kind of stuff. But yeah, no real pushback from the community. I think the real pushbacks are around like, why doesn't this do, well, for one, why isn't this POSIX? And that's a whole conversation I kind of alluded to earlier with that example. You know, POSIX has a whole history behind it. And if we really wanted to make a break in terms of something that's even easier than that, even more ergonomic than that, then we have to take a step beyond what the POSIX standard says. Then I would say the other thing that people gave pushback around was there's a lot in terms of established techniques in and around shells, including things like, say, how fish does completions. Can you do completions in that way? How environment variables are handled. One of new shell's aspirations is that it's cross-platform. So Windows handles environment variables in subtly different ways than, say, a Unix-based system. You have to be able to juggle those two. So some of those challenges are just users in the different platforms coming from other shells and saying, why doesn't it do this? Well, add it to the list. There's a, you know, a pile in the back. But yeah, that was kind of a learning experience.
It is. It's a domain where you're up against a whole lot of muscle memory.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, we kind of don't mind some of that muscle memory. So if you type LS, you're still going to get a file listing. It's a structured file listing in new shell, but it's still LS and it's still a file list. You can still use it. So I think part of it is having the shell allow you to discover it a piece at a time rather than throwing you in and saying, learn everything all again. It's at least similar enough that hopefully you don't have to.
Yeah. And that's a thing that I like about the documentation, at least as it currently exists, is there's a series of maps from Bash to new shell, from functional programming languages to new shell, from helpful in sort of highlighting pieces of context that you already have. Were there other surprising reactions from users that talking about how users were looking for, like, you know, specific behaviors that they're used to coming from existing systems? Were there other reactions you didn't expect when you started the process?
I'm not sure. I think that the main ones, well, mostly were just from us learning how to build a shell and how to do that well. So there's kind of a ramping up time period where we're just learning from listening to different folks about, okay, it needs to work like this rather than like that. You know, you can't just redirect standard out willy-nilly. You actually have to be judicious about when you're doing that. It has to make sense. If you redirect standard out and Vim is what you're running, then your Vim is going to complain at you that you're redirecting standard out. As far as other, I would say we have largely, for folks that have sat down and tried it, now there's always going to be a set of people that it's really hard to change something as fundamental as a shell. You know, if you've been using Bash for like 20 years, the chances of you saying, oh yeah, here's this pre-1.0 shell, you let me go sit on that as my daily driver. Like, okay, it's only going to be really early adopters, let's be real, for the time being. And that's totally okay. So it's, I kind of just think of that as that's assumed. There's only those early adopters, but of the early adopters that have actually sat down, tried it, say the lion's share of them are very positive. They kind of understand it. They get it. they realize like the direction that we're going. Okay, we're not there yet. That's okay. But they kind of get a sense for, yeah, this is good. This is the direction we want to go. I'm trying to think of the feedback. Yeah, most of the feedback, again, is it needs to fill the gap. Like it doesn't have all the usability of this particular shell that I want. I think another piece, and this is pretty common, I would say, for a programming language. So a programming language for folks that haven't, you know, maybe are listening and wondering, like, how long does it take to make a programming language? It's something around 5 to 7 years, I would say, from the time you submit your first PR on a repo to hitting 1.0. It's going to be in that range. It's quite a long investment to get something to the quality that you would say, yeah, that's a 1.0. And, you know, one of the things that we're doing right now is rewriting chunks of how new shell works, how the engine works, how the parser works, because we want to pull it in 10 different directions and let people embed it and use it in, say, Jupyter notebooks and all this kind of stuff. And when people really try to use it and really try to push it, that's when you see some of those design limitations and then want to go, okay, let's try again. Let me rewrite this part and get that working. So
can you think of any like specific limitations that you ran up to in those contexts?
I think early on, we didn't realize a piece of the design that I ended up chatting with the creator of Fish at one point, and he kind of set me straight. Early on, we thought that it would be asynchronous, you know, all over. So we used a lot of early async await Rust code, so early async libraries, and we just put it everywhere. We're like, okay, this is great. We'll have asynchrony everywhere. Everything will be able to use it. But when you actually sit down and look at what's happening, largely you're stitching together these commands and they just pull one from the next, right? Everything's very lazy. They're using iterators under the surface. And so you're pulling one element at a time to do your work. And if you think about how this is working, to Axel's point, the creator of Fish, is that that's when you're thinking in a shell, you're thinking about composing these units that pull synchronously. They kind of are kind of in lockstep with each other. It's not running in parallel. You're not really handling asynchronous events coming at you. It's very much you do the pipeline, and the pipeline is very step by step. And he told me that, and then I sat on it for a few months. I'm like, this is like one of those ideas that keeps eating at you in the back of your mind, and like, wait a second. Oh man, it's right. And so I sat down and talked to the other core team folks and was like, we're going to have to rewrite it. Like this isn't working. And it's one of those things where if you spend the time, you notice that there's a feature in your engine, is it pulling its weight? Like, is it valuable enough to keep in that position? And then you look, no, we're not using asynchrony anywhere, really. What in the world is it there for? Like, let's just yank it out. Let's rewrite it. Even though it's going to take a lot of work, you're going to be in a much better place later on. So that's what we end up doing. We just like pulled out 98% of all the asynchrony in the engine. And then, of course, found a bunch of optimization potential after that. It's like, oh, we simplified a bunch of code. Oh, we could rewrite this to be completely, you know, much simpler. So yeah, that was one of the things that I kind of learned along the way while we were working on it. It's like, you're going to go down wrong paths, and that's just normal, but you have to kind of stay open and listening to people and thinking about, like, is this really the best design for the language? Is this really the best design for the engine? And when it's not, you got to put the time in and fix it and be in a better place.
Very cool. So what do you, besides the, you know, the ergonomics of the engine, where you have the ability to balance other goals, what are you sort of trying to optimize for? Is it better to be fast? Is it better to be?
It sounds funny. When we first were working on new shell, one of our goals is to optimize for fun.
Okay.
Which, which sounds like, what does that mean? But if you think about the idea of the amount of time that you as a person might be spending in that shell, everything about it has to feel like enjoyable, has to feel good, which is not what you think, like Bash or Vim or, you know, whatever. Okay, some people like Vim, that's fine. Right. But there's the joke about trying to exit Vim as well. There's something about it that kind of tugs at you as, this isn't quite as enjoyable as it could be. And whether you use fun or enjoyable or ergonomic, like, I think people, in a sense, like, use different words. But for us, we knew that we want it to feel good, like solidly good. The language feels good. It feels coherent. The error messages feel like they're not slapping you on the hand. It actually feels like it's trying to help you. So I see optimization and speed as something that serves that goal. So if I'm writing a script and it performs way below, say, Python speed, it's like, oh, that's less fun. Now I have to stop what I'm doing, rewrite it in Python. Okay, that was a failed experiment, right? That's kind of a failure case, but it ends in a bunch of friction. It ends in a bunch of, you know, frustration and having to rewrite things. So the performance should be like, whoa, that's cool. That's awesome. Kind of a counterexample to that is that we added data frame support. So being able to, say, take large data sets, kind of the canonical example is, I give you a CSV file. It's over 100 megs. You're like, I don't know how long it's going to take to process this. Here, let me grab C++ and write something to process this for us. Well, in this data frame engine that New Shell uses, it's highly optimized. It uses like all the bells and whistles for data parallelism under the surface, because the person that wrote it was like, cared a ton about performance. Well, great, let's use that. But that's presented to the user in a way that just composes really nicely with other things in New Shell. So you're like, okay, I can just open the CSV file, pass it into some data frame aggregation logic, and then it's done. In half a second, you've processed, you know, 100 megs of CSV data and got your result. And then to my mind, that's kind of that delighter feeling of like, whoa, what else could this thing do? You know, when you grab your fancy sports car and you take it out for the first time, it's like, what, you know, now I really want to see what this thing can do. And I think to my mind, that's where New Shell could shine at 1.0, is that you use it, you like it, but then you realize when you push it and, you know, you're like, really put your foot pedal to the metal, it can take it. It's like, I'm never leaving that. And I think that's really when we talk about fun, I think it's some of that experience.
Excellent. So you mentioned asynchrony and that being kind of a blind alley. Are there any other design decisions you made that ended up being counterproductive?
Yeah, I feel like, let's see. So asynchrony was a big one.
Yeah.
There's part of what I'm rewriting right now is some logic and how the parser worked. For whatever reason, I think we kind of designed the parser in such a way early on that we used a fair amount of memory and it was fairly heavy. So as I was pushing it to say, like, can someone today write a 10,000 line New Shell file or 100,000 line New Shell file? And it was just like taking forever and a day to parse this. I was like, nope, that's not fun. Let's figure this out. You know, people should be able to write a giant New Shell project if they want to, you know, because it is a shell and a programming language, right? So I was looking into the parser and noticing that, oh, wow. The way we're setting this up, every time we access a variable in the engine, we're having to lock something to get to that variable. That's not going to fly. So I just end up, you know, you pull on one piece of string and then that string turns into yarn and that yarn turns into like a big cable and you're like, oh boy, there are many yaks on that hill, are there? I and a few other folks are working on rewriting the engine to make it possible that you're not having to lock for every variable access, which was kind of an accident of how the design landed. And you just get to a point and you're like, well, I'm going to have to lock to get to it. And then you realize, wait a second, that's really, really bad. Which sounds funny to say like out loud that was the end result. But I think sometimes when you're just designing and going fast, you just, okay, we'll do that for now. We'll circle back later. And yeah. I think that was one of those things.
Oh, fair enough. So were there any technical things? So you mentioned exit codes. Were there any other technical things you learned in this process that you didn't expect?
Yeah, I think stuff around POSIX, for sure. Okay. Yeah, how to handle standard in, standard out. Standard out and standard error work completely different than you would think they would just based on the name. Plenty of stuff use standard error as standard out. Reasons? I don't know. They just do. Exit codes, how a shell works, how a shell functions, how people actually use them day to day, how completions work. If you have never sat and looked at how completions work, like fancy good completions across a PowerShell or Fish, there's just so much. I mean, my background was all in programming languages, but I learned so much from different folks that came to the project, like when Andres came and was like teaching about how to think in a data processing way, or, you know, people came and were working on like data frames and stuff. So I feel like each time I kind of stopped and said, all right, let's learn this piece. Let's learn relational algebra. Let's learn data frames. Because, you know, when you want to get to something that has that, you know, delighting effect, there's a lot of pieces that have to come together to get to that. And so, yeah, I've definitely been trying to be a sponge.
So what's next on the horizon?
So for the horizon, yeah, we've got this engine stuff that we're working on. We're hoping to get on the path to 1.0 come next year. I don't know if 1.0 will land next year. That was the initial hope. It may take a little bit longer, but we would love to be well on the way to 1.0 next year. And, you know, knowing that once we hit 1.0s, that's not the end of it either. So we want to hit it in such a way that, you know, people are regularly contributing, the teams are growing around supporting it. We have more subject matter experts that are coming in and helping out. So, yeah, if people listening are interested in wondering what is it like to put data processing in a shell, come on by.
So what does that look like? How can people get involved?
So the best way to get involved is to jump into our Discord. We can probably put a link in the show notes. There's also a link if you go to newshell/newshell on GitHub. We've got links to the Discord and Twitter and stuff like that as well. So you can jump in. The Discord's very active. You can come. You'll talk to all the core team folks, hang out there regularly. And so if you have ideas, just come. And we are more than happy to plug you in and chat about any particular ideas you have, any particular areas where you feel like, oh, it'd be great if we had this set of commands. Oh, okay, cool. Let's chat about that. Let's see what that might look like. Yeah, that's a really good place to start.
Great. So one other thing I like to ask all of my guests, as I mentioned, is what are some other projects that you love, that delight you out on the internet?
I think this is almost accidental that I got really narrowed to the Rust community, but I've been so involved with the Rust community for the last few years that that's a lot of what I see are Rust projects. But just looking at the Rust ecosystem, I mentioned data frames a few times. Polars is the data frames library that we're using. It's fascinating that this is a fairly few number of people working on it, but it's so advanced. It's like one of the fastest data frame engines. And I think there's a theme of that across the Rust community. And to my mind, like, I love systems level stuff. I love people that really dig in and get really good at one thing. So like the regex library in Rust is like really good. And the say like Alacrity for a terminal is like really amazing. So these are the kind of projects I'm always on the lookout for, new ones like that as they come up. But a lot of them are kind of Rust ones that I'm excited about these days.
Excellent. And so I think that largely brings us to the end of the episode. Is there anything else of yours that you'd like to promote?
No, that's good. If folks are interested in NewShell, that's like one of my main projects these days. I also am on the Rust core team. If folks want to chat Rust and want to chat about like, the Rust community or Rust as a language, like, yeah, come on by. I'd love to chat about that too.
And how can people find you on the internet?
Easiest way is through Twitter. You can also find me on the New Shell Discord. I'm on there every day, most of the day. So,
well, thank you again for your time. As I mentioned, links to the projects mentioned will be in the show notes. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, thanks again.
Well, that wraps it up for this week on The Runtime. I remain your host, Raphael Kennedy. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe and, if possible, leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps to spread the word. If you have thoughts, feedback, or ideas of folks that I should interview for the show, please reach out either via email at raphael@runtimepodcast.com or on Twitter @podcastruntime. Thanks again for listening.